Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Padavijakacharya Satyatva Sri Srimad Mangalese Sri Bhakti Mata Shama Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Grantharaj Ki Jai. All glories and devotees, all glories and devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. So today we're speaking from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhu, can you put it at a different angle? Put it over on this side. And put the mic on me this time. I'm going to speak from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam. Fourth canto, chapter 14, text 11. Please repeat after me. I have a problem with my arm. Please repeat after me. Nirupitaha Praja Palaha. Nirupitaha Praja Palaha. Sa Jighamshati Vai Prajaha. Sa jighamshati vai prajaha. Tatapi santvayamamam. Tatapi santvayamamam. Nashmamsh tat patakam sprishet. Nashmamsh tat patakam sprishet. Nirupita praja palaha. Sa jighamshati vai prajaha. Tatapi santvaya mamum. Nashmam shtat patakam sprishet. Nirupita prajaha palaha. Sa jighamshati vai prajaha. Tatapi santvayamamum. Nashmam stat patakam sprishet. Nirupita praja palaha. Sa jighamshati vai prajaha. Tatapi santvaye mamum. Nashmam stat patakam sprishet. Others?
Tatapi santvaya mamam.
Anyone else? Please repeat after me. Nirupitaha.
Nirupitaha.
Appointed.
Appointed.
Prajapalaha.
Prajapalaha.
The king.
The king.
Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Jighamsati.
Jighamsati.
Desires to harm.
Desires
to harm. Vai.
Vai.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Prajaha.
The citizens.
Tata api.
Nevertheless.
Sanvayema.
We should pacify.
Amum.
Him.
Na.
Not.
Ashman.
Us.
Tat.
His.
Patakam.
Sinful result.
Sprishet. May touch. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. We appointed this Vena, king of the state, in order to give protection to the citizens. But now he has become the enemy of the citizens. Despite all these discrepancies, we should at once try to pacify him. By doing so, we may not be touched by the sinful results caused by him. Please repeat after me. We appointed this Vena, king of the state, in order to give protection
to the citizens.
But now he has become the enemy
of the citizens.
Despite all these discrepancies, we should at once try to pacify him. By doing so,
we may not be touched
by the sinful results caused by him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The saintly kings elected King Vena to become king, but he proved to be mischievous. Therefore, the sages were very much afraid of incurring sinful reactions. The law of karma prohibits a person even to associate with a mischievous individual. By electing Vena to the throne, the saintly sages certainly associated with him. Ultimately, King Vena became so mischievous that the saintly sages actually became afraid of becoming contaminated by his activities. Thus, before taking any action against him, the sages tried to pacify and correct him so that he might turn from his mischief. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmutambina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born to the darkest of ignorance. My spiritual master opened eyes of the shadow of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So in the purport it says that the law of karma prohibits even to associate with a mischievous individual. This doesn't just mean in person, it also means on the internet, on television, in the cinema, any place when you associate, there's various ways of associating with individuals. You can get good benefit by seeing a nice video on YouTube, you can also get sinful association. Now, when I was here, when I gave a seminar on Ram Nomi, I was doing it based upon information from the Pama Purana. When I was going through the Pama Purana, I happened to come across in the second canto of the Pama Purana, chapters 28 to 40, is all about the Prithu and Vena. The same Leela is told in the Pama Purana, but slightly differently. There's some slight differences in the some details are different. For example, in the Bhagavatam, Prithu appears at the beginning of the Chakshusha Manu, whereas in the Pama Purana, he appears at the end of the Chakshusha Manu, beginning of the Vaivashvata Manu. That's because, as we'll discuss later, things repeat. Like there's not just one monsoon season. Every year there's a monsoon season. So things repeat continuously. There's repetition. Just like Lord Ram, there's a different Leela of Lord Ram mentioned from a different Kalpa in the Pama Purana. So there's, you know, so this Leela, this explanation of Prithu and Vena in the Pama Purana gives a lot of background information, gives a lot of information which is supplements what is found in the Srimad Bhagavatam. First of all, it's going to explain why Prithu was Prithu and why Vena was the way he is. So, first of all, Prithu's mother, or Vena's mother, was Sunita. Now, Sunita, she happened to be the daughter of Yamaraj, of Mrityu. Can we shut these doors? Okay. So we have to listen to this. So Sunita was the daughter of Mrityu, of Dharmaraj, Yama, like the daughter of death. But she was, you know, innocent girl. She was very beautiful. She had many girlfriends. And they were going in the forest playing. She was young. And she came across this one Gandharva boy. What was his name? His name was Shushanka. And Shushanka was doing tapasya. He was meditating, he was in samadhi, meditating on Saraswati, because he wanted to get perfection in music, because he's a Gandharva. Gandharvas are musicians. So he wanted to get the siddhi in musical accomplishment. So he was there just minding his own business in the forest, doing tapas. So, being a young girl, you know, like children are, she was a little bit mischievous. So she was trying to break his meditation, making noises, making faces, you know, throwing stones to break his meditation. And she kept doing this every day. And he told her, no, stop this, you know, stop, go away, just get lost, basically, you know, just get lost. Every day she was doing this. Finally she became very angry, and she began slapping him. Because he's telling her every day, you know, to go away. Just, you know, like little children come and they keep bothering you, and then you tell the little children to get away. You know, they're harassing you. And he's trying to do some serious, you know, he was doing serious things. He was trying to get perfection in his study of music. So finally she got upset with him. She became angry, and she slapped him. And she was slapping him and beating him. And then he said, you know, he also became angry, but said, you know, though slapped, one should restrain himself and not slap back. Though caused to cry, one should not cause others to cry. This is the righteousness. This is caused by righteousness. But she was very puffed up, And she said, well, my father is Yamaraj, and he punishes the wicked and he rewards the truthful, and he's not affected by what he does, implying that she also could do whatever she wanted to do. Because she's the daughter of Yamaraj, she can also go and slap people and there's no sin involved. So he just got up and he left because he didn't want to do anything, because she's just self-restrained, plus she was a girl, he didn't want to hit her. So he just left. So then she went back to her father and she said, what does it mean? He said, she explained what happened, and she said, what does it mean that that one should not slap, hit those people who hit them, and that one should not make those cry who make you cry? What does this mean, father? And Yamaraj didn't say anything, he just kept quiet. He just kept quiet, he didn't say a word. But then she got more angry, she went back in the forest looking for him, and she started beating him up. Started beating him really, beating him hard as much as she could. And then he became very annoyed, that he's innocent, he's just minding his own business, trying to do tapas, he's not bothering her, he's not bothering anybody, but then she's coming and with aggression and hitting him, beating him. So now he curses her. He cursed her. I just said, I'm innocent, but you're beating me. So when you get married and have a child, your son is going to be the most sinful wretch who will be an atheist. He will decry the gods. He will curse the Brahmins. That will be your son. Like this. And then he just left and went someplace else. So now she was very upset. She was quite scared that she's been cursed. So she goes back to her father and she explains the whole thing. And now he's very, what have you done? This is a very foolish thing to do. That you beat an innocent person, truthful person, for no reason. Now you have to suffer the consequences. Like that, So in the meantime, there's Anga, because Anga is the father of Dana. So in his case, what happened with him, there's two stories going on at the same time here. So Anga, he is in the Pama Purana, he is the son of Atri. So Atri is one of the manifested sons of Lord Brahma. So he was in Nandanandana, and he saw Lord Indra, and Indra's entourage, and how Indra is so resplendent, and how Indra is so great, and he has so many beautiful celestial women and Gandharvas who are glorifying him and chanting and things like that. So he was thinking how he would like to have a son like Indra. So he went back to his father and he asked his father, how can I have a son like Indra? What did Indra have to do to become Indra? So therefore I want to know what I should do so I can have a son who is just like that. So Atri said, it's a very good question. Excellent question. So in his previous life, Indra was a Brahmin named Suvarna. And he meticulously worshipped Rishikesh. He worshipped Janardhan, Govinda. And by tapasya, a long time like tapasya like this, Govinda became happy. And he gave him this position of Indra. And Indra is a devotee of Krishna. Like this, it's mentioned in the read Bhagavad Gita that Indra is a devotee. Okay. So this Anga was very happy to hear that. So he went and he did serious tapasya for 100 celestial years, in worship, meditating on Janardhana. So finally, after this deep meditation, Krishna appeared to him and asked him, well, what do you want? So he gave a whole long list of all the qualities that his son should have. But basically, they were And it boiled down to, give me a son who resembles Indra, who has the luster and valor are just like Vishnu, and who is a great Vaishnava, and who destroys all sins. That's the basically what he wanted. He wanted a son who's like Vishnu, who's like Indra, who's got the power and luster of Vishnu, and who is a great devotee of Vishnu. So this is what he wanted. Right? So he wanted that's the kind of son he wanted. So now, going back to Sunita, so she goes to her father and he's very upset with her, and she's very upset, you know, like, because he wanted to, like every father, he wants to get his daughter married. So he goes, he went to Indra, to the assembly of sages, and he explains, my daughter is ready for marriage, so I'm willing to give my daughter to any qualified person like that. And so they all agreed. She's very qualified at Indra, and she's very qualified in every way, except she has one blemish. She's been cursed. Everybody, even though it all happened in the forest, everybody knew because they have the mystic cities, and they could tell she has this curse. No one's going to wants to marry her, so go away. Please go away. We don't want to see you. Don't come back. Nobody wants to marry her. So now his daughter is, he's upset, daughter, because nobody wants to marry his daughter, and she's upset. So so she asks, well, what should I do? He said, you should now dedicate your life to self-purification, to tapasya, at least accept your fate, and just, try to make the best out of a bad bargain. So she went into the fort. This really sobered her up. Before she was just, she got in trouble because she was immature and just, irresponsible. And, in her excessive playful mood, she became aggressive. This really was like a bucket of cold water, shocked her into being sober, that life is a lot more serious. You just can't go around, beating people. Even if you're a child, there's a reaction. So she was doing she was in the forest doing extremely severe austerities. Austerities that she began to wither. She's not eating, she's not drinking, she's in, all the elements are falling on her, etc. So all her girlfriends, they're also the daughters and of sages and Gandharvas and different, celestial beings. So they came to her and they were trying, and they said, no, you shouldn't do this. This is going to ruin your life. Everything has got some blemish. Don't get depressed. And so they gave a list of everybody, Indra raped Ahalya, and this one did this, and this one did this. A list of all great people, but nobody cares. They did something wrong, but their greatness overcame that. So you shouldn't be too concerned about this. Be happy. And we will give you one mantra, Vashikarana. Everybody heard that, know what Vashikarana is? Vashikarana mantra. We'll give you a mantra, a Vashikarana mantra, that whoever you aim this mantra at, they will become totally fascinated with you and they will marry you on the spot. So she would get, and there is such, Vashikarana, people they use, there are a lot of people who cheat by trying to sell these mantras, and so it's dangerous. So anyway, she was happy. So with her friend Ramba, they went to the Nanda Nandana, and they were spying, they were looking around who could be a suitable husband for her. So then she spots Anga, and they tell her that he's been blessed, that he will have a son who will be like Indra, who will have the power of Vishnu and will be a great devotee. So she's thinking, well, if he's that, this will counteract my curse, because he's going to have a son like Vishnu, and that will counteract my curse that my son will be an atheist. So your fire and water, they don't mix. Something good will happen. So then Ramba, he went into some cave and he began to meditate on Janardana. So they hatched a plot. And Rumba, she went outside and she began to play musical instruments and sing. And this broke his meditation. And he came out and then he saw the girl. He saw Sunita. So he approached her and she was like gorgeous, just at the peak of perfection. And he was fascinated by her and he started asking her all kinds of questions. Who you belong to, are you married, this and that. And she didn't say a word. She just like pointed, to Rumba. So then the stage turned to Rumba and she began to explain who she was and she wants to get married. If you want to marry her, you have to, you can't change your mind later, etc. Like that, convinced him and he immediately agreed. And they got married by Gandharva rites and he gave her a son. She immediately, he was very powerful. So immediately she got pregnant and they gave birth to Vena. Vena. So of course they didn't tell Anga about the curse because he was totally, they used the Vashikarna on him and his mind was totally bewildered. So he picked this girl. So Vena, at first he was very dharmic. He worshipped his parents, and though his father was a Brahmin, he became interested in Kshatriya activities, and he was very godly, etc. And at the end of the Chakshusha Manu, in the beginning of Vaivarshvata Manu, there was no king, so he was installed as a king. And he was ruling the universe, and everything was going well. But then, what happened? This very large Jain Digambar Muni. These Digambar Munis? Jain Digambar Munis? They're naked. Their clothing is the forecourt, the digs. So he came to the court of the king. And the king asked him, what is your philosophy? What do you do? What is that? Asked him all kinds of questions. What is your Veda? What is Dharma? And so, but the Jains don't believe in the Veda. So it was Krishna who came in the form of this Jain Muni. Krishna came as this Jain Muni, the Gambar Muni. And he just began to blaspheme the Vedas. And by using so many logical arguments, he totally undermined the Vedas. He undermined all Vedic culture. He says, what is the benefit of sacred rivers? Are the fish, what's so special about, are the fish great saints? They live in those sacred rivers. They're just ordinary. They're just fish. The most contemptible beings. And these kind of arguments. So the only people who benefit from the Shraddha ceremony is the Brahmins who ate the food. Nobody else. And he was going on. And the Vedas, they're just a bunch of murderous texts which, invoke the killing of innocent animals. And he was going on and on like this. And you shouldn't teach Vedas. You shouldn't do any Vedic sacrifices. You shouldn't honor your mother and father. You shouldn't do anything like that. In fact, you should just worship Jinn. And the ultimate conclusion is that you are God. Because that's, the remaining Jain Munis, they believe that they're God. I had my astrology teacher was a Jain, so oftentimes at his house I would sometimes Jain Munis would come. And I didn't argue, I just asked them questions about what they believe, and ultimately they said that actually yes, we become God. You worship the Arhat, then you become a God. So he convinced Vena that you don't have to worship any of the Vedas because you are the object of the Vedas yourself, you are God. So he stopped all sacrifices. He stopped all worship. He wouldn't even touch the feet of his own parents. He became so sinful. He decried the Brahmins, he decried the sages, he decried the Vedas, he decried God. And this way he was just, just the reverse of what he was like before. So at this point, Anga came to his wife and said, whose fault is this?
By what fault? I was blessed that my son would become virtuous and would become like Indra with the qualities of Vishnu and be a great Vaishnava, yet now this, our son has become an atheist. Why? What happened? What's the reason? So then, his wife Sunita explained about the curse. So then, they just both went to the forest. And they just did a tapasya. So then the Brahmins, the sages, the rishis, they were very concerned, what to do. Like they have an atheist as the king, who, he just proclaimed himself the Vaina would speak like this. He says, the wicked one always said to the Brahmanas, you should not study the Vedas, you should not make offerings into the fire, you should not give gifts, you should not perform sacrifices, and should not make offerings into fire. When destruction was imminent, this was a declaration of that king. Again and again he said, sacrifices are to be offered to me. I am the sacrificer as well as the sacrifice. He also said to them, sacrifices should be offered to me, offerings should be made to me. Thus Vaina always spoke. He also said, I am the eternal Vishnu, I am Brahma, I am Rudra, I am Indra, I am the wind, I am the enjoyer, I am the oblations offered to the fire, deities and pitris. There was no doubt about this. So he kept on speaking this way in a crazy way. So finally, the rishis had enough. They had enough of this. And they hunted him down. They didn't, in the Bhagavatam they kill him, but in the Paramapurana they don't kill him. They just capture him, and they, by some method, they churn his hands. They have some method. And out of his left hand comes this creature. They describe ugly, black, short, black, the same as it's described in the Bhagavatam, he was called a Nishada, because when he asked, what should I do? They said, sit down, which means Nishada, sit. And then from the other hand, they churned the hand, and out of that hand came Prithu. Prithu had all the qualities that Krishna blessed Anga with, that his son would be. That's why Prithu has the qualities that he had, because Vaina's father Anga was blessed that he would have a son with so many good qualities. So that was Prithu. That's why Prithu had those qualities, because his grandfather had been blessed that way, right? And that's why the other side was there. Why Vaina had the evil side was there. Now, in the Paramapurana, Vaina is not killed, but because the evil part was taken out of him, he was purified. He did tapasya, and then he went back to Godhead. What happened to Vaina after death is not explained in the Bhagavatam. But this explains why why Prithu had the godly qualities, and what was it that, because it just says in the Bhagavatam that Sunita, because she was the daughter of death, that this was the reason why Vaina had this sinful character, but didn't give any detail. So this is the reason why, because she was cursed, right? So everybody, so far. So what is the problem with this story? What is the problem with this? What's wrong with this presentation? What's wrong with what I just said? Can anybody tell me what's wrong with this whole story? Well, in the Bhagavatam it says that Prithu took birth at the beginning of the Chakshusha Manu. And in the Pama Purana it says at the sort of at the beginning, at the end of the Chakshusha Manu and the Vaivashvata Manu. So assuming that it's in this Kalpa, the Chakshusha Manu beginning would have been about 400 million years ago. Right? Or if we take the Bhagavatam and the beginning of the Vaivashvata Manu, that would be approximately 100 million years ago. 28 Mahayugas. So how could there be a Jain Muni? How could there be a Jain Muni? That a Jain Muni converted Vena to Jainism. Mahavir was a contemporary of Lord Buddha, right? And Lord Buddha, the scholars say Lord Buddha appeared around in the 6th century BC. That's only 2,500 years ago. How you can have Jains 400 million years ago? Right? You have to think. You meet some... That's correct. See, there's two different... That's how devotees should understand it. But if you meet some mundane scholar, the scholars, the Indologists, they have a different view. The Vedic worldview of time and the mundane worldview of time, the scholar worldview of time is very different. The scholars have a linear view of time, whereas in the Vedic worldview is cyclical. The scholars, their worldview of time is based upon the Christians and Jews. Though they may be atheists today, most scholars, academics are atheists, secular. They're not like the 100 years ago missionaries who were all like gung-ho Christians trying to turn everybody into a Christian. But they inherited their concepts. So, for example, the early Christian scholars who came to India, like, can't remember his name now. He's the one who sort of like started the. He was studying Sanskrit. He's one of the first viceroys of the East India Company in Calcutta. I can't remember his name at the top right now, but he determined that that there was a similarity between Sanskrit, Greek, and Latin. Now this is like in the late 1700s. So these people firmly, they were Christians, they firmly believed in God and in the Bible. But according to them, because they inherited from the Jews, that they believed that the world was created According to them, they calculated that the world was created at 9 o'clock in the morning on October the 23rd of 4004 BC. That's when the world was created. Where Adam and Eve, after the sixth, and God created, this and like that. But that's when they believed the world was created. 4004 BC. That's like only, 6023 years ago. That's what they believe, these Christians who came to India. So how are they going to understand, manvantaras and kalpas and yugas, or, this is going to be, this doesn't fit in. This does not fit in with their time cycle. And everything is just in a straight line. Goes out. They just couldn't imagine. To give you an example, one time I was in when I was first came to India and living in Hyderabad. It was like 1977, and at Mangal Artik I noticed there was these. It's still dark outside, but there's lights. There's lights and there's this pile of dead bodies, of insects underneath the light. So these insects, they weren't there before the dark, so they all came, They did their business and they died before the sun came up. So they took birth after the sun rose, after the sun set, and they died before the sun rose. So they don't even know they don't know that there's a daytime. They only think there's a nighttime. What to speak of a week, or a paksha, or a month, or a ritu, or a year. They only know night. So that's what, you know, so similarly these scholars, they can't conceive of long spans of time like this. Of course now they have all these different, you know, archaeological eras, placing the dinosaurs and all these different things. But still they don't see things in terms of cycles. Everything is linear, goes in a straight line. So that's one of the things. Whereas in the whole Vedas, in Vedic worldview, there's not history. They're not interested in chronological explanations of history. The stories which are mentioned in the Puranas, in the Vedas, they're chosen not as a history 101 course. You know, the Napoleonic Wars and the revolutionary era in Europe in the 1840s and 50s, and then the centralization of the German republics into the German Empire and leading up to the First World War, and then at the end of the First World War, four empires were dissolved: the Ottoman Empire, the Russian Empire, the German Empire, and the Austrian. It's not like that. The histories which are mentioned in the Vedas and Puranas are only told specifically because they teach a spiritual lesson. Some didactic purpose is there, not so that you get a degree in history. So that historical reference may be from this yuga, or from a previous yuga, or from a previous manvantara. It's like in every manvantara, everything practically repeats itself. With each manvantara, all the demigods, they're all changed out. All the demigods are changed out. A new Indra, a new Varuna, a new Yama, you know, everybody is changed over. Like when the government changes, you know, new chief minister, you still have a prime minister, you still have a defense minister, but it's all different people. So similar, and similar things happen in that manvantara. It's a long period of time. Manvantara is 71 Mahayugas. So it's a long period of time. And for us, it's a long period of time. For Lord Brahma, it's 51 minutes. It's only 51 minutes of Lord Brahma's time. So things repeat themselves. Not exactly, but there'll be similarities. You know, and the same thing happens from one yuga to the next yuga. There'll be very many similar things. It's like you can predict, this is the monsoon season. So it will be very much like the last monsoon season, and very similar to the next monsoon season, but there's going to be different. Maybe this one is wetter, the next one maybe not so, it could be more, you know, more cyclones, less cyclones, it could be some dry spell, you know. Every monsoon season is wet. Everybody knows it's a monsoon season, but they're not the same. Some monsoon seasons, there's not much rain, and not as much as the next. Sometimes there's too much rain, but you can tell it's a monsoon season. But if somebody says to you, this happened during the monsoon season. Which monsoon season? 25 monsoon seasons ago, or, you know, when exactly? You can't tell because it comes in a cycle. So the same thing is there, you know, in everything in the Veda culture. For example, the Puranas explain who, you know, at the end of every Dwarpa Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga, Vyasa Dev appears. It happens in every Mahayuga. At the end of Dwarpa Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga, Vyasa Dev appears. But it's a different person becomes Vyasa Dev. And it gives a list of who they all were in the past and who they will be in the future. In the Vishnu Purana, specifically mentions this list. So who will be the next Vyasadeva? Does anybody know? Who is going to be the next Vyasadeva in the next Mahayuga? Anybody know? Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama will be the next Vyasadeva. Because he is a Chiranjiva. Though he did a very sinful activity of killing all the children of the Pandavas in their sleep, and he was punished by Lord Krishna. He was shaved his head. Not just the hair, the skin also was taken. You know. And his body stunk for like that, but that was only for 4,000 years. 4,000 years. So that was reaction ended 1,000 years ago. And since he was the son of a great rishi, he continued with his process of self-purification. That's why in the next Mahayuga he will be Vyasadeva. Well, it gives the lists of who will be in the different posts of the different manvantaras, who will be the different saptarishis at different times. So the activities repeat themselves. It's like in a previous kalpa, there was Ramlila, slightly different from this Ramlila. In this Ramlila, Lord Ram had an older sister. In the previous Ramlila, he had an older brother who died. His older sister was given away in adoption to one of the friends of Dasarath, Ramapada, and she eventually married Rishyashringa, and so she was much older. Because Rishyashringa is the one who did the Putra Yajna for Dasarath, so they could have Ram like that. So Rishyashringa is the brother-in-law of Lord Ram. So there's always this change in. So the Vedas, they teach eternal religion, but they also teach about all the different atheistic systems and how to defeat them. Why? Because the material world is meant for atheists, right? It's not. Material world is where atheists are sent. People who are envious of God are sent to the material world, so it's all full of atheists. And they have their reasons, and they have their logical systems of why they want to be atheists. So Buddhism is not new. There was one Gaudiya Math Sannyasi. He wrote a whole article about the Dasa Avatar. He wrote a book about the Dasa Avatars. And for Lord Buddha, he gives explanation of so many appearances of Lord Buddha. You know, Gautama Buddha, Siddhartha Buddha, the Vishnu avatar of Buddha, like that. This is not just one time Buddha. And similarly, you know, the Jainism is mentioned, you know, also. In fact, in the fifth canto, Rishabdev, when he leaves his body in Karnataka, there's one king named Arhat, who then he concocts the whole Jain philosophy based upon Rishabdev. Concocts a whole philosophy. And even one of the most modern what is the modern scientific system of atheism which we find today? What is the modern scientific system of atheism? That life evolves from matter, right? Darwinism. But this is old. This is a very old system. It's not new. In fact, in the second adhyaya of the Vedanta Sutra, the beginning of the second adhyaya, there's a whole discussion. It's, you know, where the Sankhya Karika of the atheist Kapila is mentioned. And that's all about how that everything evolves from matter. A God comes from matter, the soul comes from matter. That's why Srila Prabhupada, because he studied Vedanta Sutra, he was able to immediately give all the arguments to defeat material science. Because this is not old. This is, I mean, this is not new. It's very old. It repeats itself over and over again. You want to know how to defeat atheism, all different forms of atheism? We just study Vedanta. It teaches you how to defeat modern, mundane science. Sankhya Karika, like that. So nothing is new. To give you an example, the Christians, they always tried to compress everything into their own time cycle, which means, 4004 BC. So many cultures believed in, they had very long time cycles, not just Vedas, not just Vedic culture had long time cycles. There are many, like the Egyptians, the Iranians, the Babylonians had very, very long time cycles. For example, there was one after the Greeks under Alexander, they conquered Egypt and they conquered Persia. So there was one Egyptian, his name was Manetho. So he gave a whole history of Egyptian kings going back for 24,000 years from his time, which was significantly longer than the Christian tradition allowed. So they just couldn't figure out how to... So what they did is, their whole objective was to change, to make everything fit in with Christianity. So they said, well, these people, they didn't really know what years were. What he actually meant was months. So it wasn't 24,000 years, it was 24,000 months, which adds up to 2,000 years, which is just perfect. It just fits in with Christianity. They did the same thing with India. I wrote a whole article about Chanakya. We all hear, we're taught in school that Chanakya Pandit was contemporary of Alexander the Great. We read that, right? We learned this, that Chanakya Pandit and Alexander the Great were contemporaries. But that's not true. Not according to the Bhagavatam. It's not true at all. What happened was that Sir Alexander Jones, that's the one I was thinking of, Sir Alexander Jones, he was the Viceroy of India in 1790. And he was studying, he had a pundit, and he was studying the Bhagavatam. And he's the one who realized that there was a connection between Greek, Sanskrit, and Latin. And they all came from a common source. So what he was trying to figure out the history of India. So what the whole idea was then, to try to figure out, to try to find when is the first time there's a contact between Europe and India. And then you can go backward and forward from that time. This becomes the linchpin, what is called the linchpin of Indian history. So that is Alexander the Great. He came to India in 326 BC. He died 3 years later in Babylon. So he came, and he got stopped by the Punjabis. That's another story. So what he did, he tried to figure out from studying the Greek texts and comparing names which are found in the Puranas and trying to figure out who is who, if they could come to some common terms. So in the Greek texts, they give the names of people like of Indian things like Zandramis and he figured out that they must mean Chandragupta. It was Chandragupta. That was the contemporary of Alexander the Great. But there was a problem. There was two Chandraguptas. There was Chandragupta Maurya, and there was a Chandragupta and Samudragupta of the imperial Guptas. Which one was it? Because they're 1,200 years apart. 1,200 years apart. So he picked Chandragupta Maurya because that That made it all. That then you could all be within Christian, the you know Moses and all these different things. Yeah, it all fit into Christianity. Otherwise, it would be outside the Christian timeline. So he cut off 1,200 years of Indian history. But if you use the Srimad Bhagavatam, I mean, I wrote a whole article on it. But the Srimad Bhagavatam gives the lists of kings starting from the Mahabharata war with the son of Jarasandha, and goes all the way back to the Nandas. You know who the Nandas were? The Nandas? They were the ones who were in Magadha, who was then killed by Chandragupta Maurya. So that was like 1500 BC, 1600 BC. That was when Chandragupta Maurya lived, and Chanakya, not the 4th century BC. That means also that Lord Buddha is not from the 6th century BC, but he's from the 18th century BC. So everything is all messed up because of it. They squished the historical timeline to fit in with their concept of with their scripture. Like that. So it's a whole, you know, a lot of mess that was done like that. That's why if you read, you know, that they will say that if it mentions Buddhism in Vedanta Sutra, it means that the Vedanta Sutra was written after Lord Buddha as opposed to before Lord Buddha. You know, they have all these different notions like that. So, but the Shastras, because they are coming from Krishna, they're coming from God and coming from self-realized souls, they can see into the past, the present, and into the future. And so we shouldn't be confused when we read different renditions of similar topics. For example, if you read the character Parikshit Maharaj in the Mahabharata, it's very different from what is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam or in other Puranas. That is because Parikshit Maharaj appeared, a different person called Parikshit appeared at different times. Not to be confused by these things. Any questions or comments?
So when you say that, it will be the soul.
No, the Ashwatthama won't die.
Okay.
He's a Chiranjiva.
So,
it's like Hanuman is still alive.
So
Jambavan is still alive.
Same soul, same body.
No, he's in the same body.
Okay.
He's in the same body. He hasn't died. He won't die. He'll build. It's like there are two kings. Can't remember their names right now. One of them is the older brother of Shantanu. Yeah, Shantanu is Bhishma Dev's father, right? So Shantanu actually was the younger brother. And his brother, his older brother was supposed to be the king. Anyway, it's a long story, but his older brother is waiting in a village, I think it's called Shambhala, waiting for Kali Yuga to end, and then he will be like a soul, the Chandravamshi. Anyway, the king, there's a king from the Chandravamshi and a king from the Surya Vamsha, who are they are waiting somewhere in the Himalayas, in another dimension, waiting for Kali Yuga to end so they can start Satya Yuga. So Ashwatthama is not dead. He is still around somewhere in disguise, someplace. It's like a Hanuman will remain in the material world as long as the glories of Ram are being sung. There are five persons from the Ramayana who were not sent back, who did not go back to Ayodhya Dham with Ram. That was Vibhishan, Hanuman, Jambavan, Mainda, and Dudvida. Mainda and Dudvida, they were aspects of the Ashwini Kumars. And Jambavan is was from Lord Brahma. Of course, Hanuman is Maruti. And so, of course, Dudvida was killed by Balaram. So he's no longer with him. But the others are still there, still alive.
So when we say that Ashwarama is still alive, and Hanuman will be there, it will be the same kalpa or is it different kalpa?
Like, no, no. At the end, in the next, in the case of Ashwatthama, in the next Mahayuga, where this is the 28th Mahayuga. Okay. So in the 29th, in each Manvantara, there's 71 Mahayugas. Okay. So in the 29th Manvantara, in the 29th Mahayuga, Ashwatthama will be Vyasadeva. Okay. They're going to give a whole list of who, I don't know who's going to be the next one after that, but they already know who's going to be given the post. Just like in the GBC, right? So last year, the chairman of the GBC was Madhu Sevita, and the vice chairman was, please forget his name. Anyway, the vice chairman is now, he's the chairman, and the second vice chairman is now the vice chairman, that's the Ramai Swami. So next year, he'll be the chairman of the GBC, and so we know who's going to be the next year the chairman. We know for a long time ahead who's going to be the chairman of the GBC.
When you say about Indra, that Indra was son of, in the previous life Indra was son of, and then he became Indra, so body is soul or it was like?
No, he took birth as Indra. He was awarded the position of Indra. It's different in different, it can be in different ways, it can be done. In different ways, just like Dhruva went back to Godhead in his own body, but that's not the norm, Or like Narada Muni, he just when he got separated, immediately his body fell off, and he was there in a different form. The soul is eternal. So it's different in different circumstances. But we have to remember that we're just seeing not just the time, but like the time span. We're just like little tiny little insects who have a very short, like in the duration of time that we've had this class, there are single cell organisms in your intestines who reproduced and had children and their grandchildren, in the length of time we've been talking. And they don't even know that we're in the class. They completely, they're discussing atheism, that there's no God. And they don't even know that they're in your intestine. What to speak of what the material, this whole material world. This material world, we're tiny. The material world is described in the fifth canto from the perspective of devas, from the perspective of Lord Brahma. That's how they view the material world. But we only can see within a certain spectrum of the electromagnetic spectrum. We can't see different things. If we were to be able to see things the way, there's even some birds, they can see things, they can see ultraviolet light. So so if you viewed the world through their eyes, everything would look different. If we could see gravitation, if we could see gravitational waves, then the world would look, if we looked at the world, we'd see like a big donut because of the Van Allen belt, magnetic rings around the earth. But we don't see those things. But the devas, they see things much different than we do. So when they have a description of the universe, it's going to be, we can't fathom it. Some people are saying, well, how can it be flat and a globe at the same time? Right? There's an argument. There's so many people are arguing whether the Bhumandala is flat or whether it's a globe. How can it be both at the same time? It can be. It depends upon your perspective. For example, I'm going to write an article on this, but in mathematics there's a field called topology. which has to do with curved surfaces. So suppose you had a circle that was 100 miles in diameter. Actually, they have circles. They built structures which are 10 miles in diameter. They're like the CERN in Switzerland at CERN. They have a like these what do they call them? These super colliding. These no, they have these. It has a ring, and there's a tube, and they pass plasma gas through it. Try to make these super colliders. You know, make the atom smashers to go. They're going in a big circle very fast. You know, but the thing is, when you're on the circle itself, it looks just like a straight line. But from a distance, it's a circle. That's called a manifold of one. And when you're up really close, if you were to take an electron microscope and take a picture of this, the edge would be flat. But when we see it, it's round. From a different distance, it has a different appearance. So we're tiny little beings in the universe, and we see things. You know, like the ant who's walking on you just thinks you're part of the earth, right? He doesn't know that you're a human, that you're alive, that you're a human being, that you have thoughts, that you have a wife and children. He thinks you're just part of the landscape. From his perspective, you're flat. From his perspective, but from your other people's perspective, they can see. Oh, from a distance, well, he's a he's got arms, he's got legs, he's got a head. It just depends upon the distance. Everything has a totally different perspective. So you can have just like you can have a so just like you can have on one dimension, something appears to be straight, but it's actually a curve. You can have on the second dimension, it appears to be flat, but when you go from a distance, it's actually a globe, right? From a very far distance, it's you could take a picture of a ball, a close-up image, and it looks totally flat. But from a distance, you see it's a ball. So it just depends upon your perspective. So Lord Brahma, and they're all looking at it from down. It looks totally different. So we can't depend upon our limited senses. We can only hear within a certain spectrum. We can only see within a certain spectrum with our vision. You know, dogs, animals, they can hear different things. You know, which we can't hear. They can smell things which we can't smell from a distance. They can hear things, they can see things which we can't see. Like I saw one program was about there's birds, like with some sort of a predatorial bird, like a type of hawk, and they had the ability to see ultraviolet light. And there was these mice. They were able to see from a distance these mice. How? Because the mice, in their urine, they would excrete a substance which gave ultraviolet light. So then mice, they pass urine and stool everywhere. Whenever they're in one place, they're passing urine. They don't go out to the bathroom. So they're passing stool. So wherever they're walking, they're passing urine. So it's a whole long trail of ultraviolet light. So this bird could see that when the mouse is crossing over the urine, there's a black spot. The ultraviolet light is blocked. So that's how they go and catch. In the dark, they're able to catch the mouse that way. Because they're able to see that. We can't see that. So when we start arguing about whether the earth is flat or whether the earth is round, it's idiotic, actually. And even Sukadev Goswami says, this is what superior authorities have told me. It's not for us to see. We can't see it that way. Is what how you know? So if imagine two germs in your intestines arguing whether you exist or not, whether there is a God, whether they don't even know that you're there, they don't even know that they're living in your intestines. That's what we're like. We're like little amoebas, and trying to understand, but it's beyond our comprehension. completely beyond our comprehension. Time cycles, the geography of the and the universe, which is so great for us, that is, that's passing through the skin hole of Lord Mahavishnu. It's going through the with tiny little pores in the skin, and the universe is passing through it. And for us, it's when Markandeya Rishi, Markandeya Rishi was the Pandavas came to see Markandeya Rishi in the forest, and he's a Chiranjiva. He looks like he's only 25 years old, 25 years old, but with every hair on his body, a kalpa, you know, a kalpa of Lord Brahma, or is it a kalpa or a Brahmanda? Anyway, he lives a long time, very long time. So one time he was doing meditation, and Lord Vishnu appeared. And so Lord Vishnu came, said, "What do you want? What blessing do you want?" "I want to see how your Maya works. I want to see how your Maya works." So then, Vishnu, okay, he smiled, it's okay. So then Markandeya Rishi is meditating, and he lives a very long time. And then there was the pralaya, and everything became, you know, raining, and the sun was blotted out, and there was nothing, and there's just like water everywhere. And he's like, you know, he's swimming in the ocean, and it's completely pitch black, and there's Timingala fish, and there's crocodiles, and there's sharks, and he's, you know, trying to dodge them, you know, and it's raining, and he's trying to stay afloat. And then he sees in the distance, you know, I guess he's trying to paddle. He sees in the distance a light. And he goes to the light, and he sees that there is on a banyan leaf, there's a little baby, bluish colored, sucking his toe. And he's very beautiful, and Markandeya Rishi is totally fascinated. Then the baby breathes in, and Markandeya Rishi is inside the baby, and it's like a whole new universe. And there's no rain, there's no water, and Markandeya Rishi is walking all over the place trying to find the end of this universe, and he's not able to find the end of the universe. And the baby breathes out, boom, and then Markandeya Rishi is back in the water. And then, you know, then he's back. And then after some time, then the water level went down and like that, and the dry land, and Markandeya Rishi is back in his ashram. And then Lord Vishnu appeared and says, "So, how did you like it? How'd you like it?" So, we can't tell where the inside is, where the outside is, you know. And we're trying to figure out whether it's a flat or round. You know, when Krishna was, they accused Krishna of eating dirt, right? So Mother Yashoda said, "I didn't eat dirt." "No, open your mouth." So Krishna opens his mouth, and Mother Yashoda looks in, and she sees herself. She sees the whole universe, and she sees herself looking at Krishna's mouth. And she's like, you know, she was becoming a little disturbed. And she's thinking, "Well, who is this boy?" You know, she began to think about Krishna a different way. So Krishna didn't want that his mother should think of him in some other way. So he put his Maya on her, and she just said, "Anyway, Krishna, don't eat dirt anymore. Just don't eat any more dirt." She's seeing inside Krishna herself. Everything is with Krishna. And so, we're to speak of time, you know, time I am. It is the time factor which enters into the, which creates the material world. It is a time factor which disturbs the pradana. The time factor is the separated energy of Krishna, explained in the Bhagavatam. It is a time factor which creates, you know, you've heard of the term separated energy. What does that mean? Prabhupada is explaining on a morning walk. So on the morning walk, there was two tape recorders. They had two tape recorders at Srila Prabhupada. So separated energy. He said, "Okay, stop." Says, "Okay." You could hear it. So that take that tape recorder, rewind it a little bit. So now play it. Then to hear Prabhupada, his previous, "That's my separated energy." That is my separated energy. So this is the time factor, which was what creates the separated energy. And time is, you know, it's like 1 second for Lord Brahma is 100,000 years for us. We can't even comprehend something like that. You know, so that means the Mahayuga lasts for 43 seconds for Lord Brahma. 43 seconds. A life of Lord Indra lasts for 51 minutes. And there's like 36 million Kali Yugas in the lifetime of Lord Brahma. It's not the first Kali Yuga. We think it's so bad. Oh, it's so bad. But it's not it's like many, like 18, you know. Now it's like, there's about 18,473 Kali Yugas have passed for Lord Brahma in this lifetime. Because today is the day after Lord Brahma's 50th birthday. Yesterday was his birthday. His yesterday, not our yesterday. His yesterday was his 50th birthday. This is a dwit. If you do a sankalpa, what do they say? Dwitiya Pararda? Is that part of the sankalpa? Who does sankalpas here? It says Dwitiya Pararda, means on the second half of Lord Brahma's life. And this is the 28th Mahayuga. So according to Lord Brahma's time scale, it's in 20 minutes, it will be noon, and he'll do his Sandhya Vandanam. For us, that will take 120 million years. We can't, you know, comprehend these things. When King Kakudni, he wanted to find a suitable husband for his daughter Revati. So he went to Brahmaloka and asked Lord Brahma, who would be a good husband for my wife, for my daughter? So Brahma said, just wait. The Gandharvas and the Apsaras, they're dancing. I want to see the performance. You can ask me your question later. So after the performance was over, the Lord Brahma said, so what do you want? What's your question? So then Kakumi said, I want to find a good husband for my daughter. He said, well, do you know, in the interim time since this happened, everything on the earth has been obliterated. You know, even your name is not remembered. Millions of you, many Mahayugas have passed. Even your name is not remembered. You'd give her to Balaram as a husband. Give her to Balaram. Like that, you know. It was a foolish thing to come here, you know. Because things happen like that. They pass. Or even if you take, everybody's had the experience of how the time factor is just changes. Like you go to sleep, and it seems like, you think you're sleeping a long time and it's just only a few minutes. Right? Everybody had that experience? Or you sleep and you think only a few minutes, a short period of time has gone, and it's like hours have gone by. Isn't it? Everybody's had that experience? A whole kalpa went by. You know, you had the whole Mahabharata, the whole Ramayana, everything took place. And it's lunchtime. It's just, I'm just in time for lunch. But because time distortion is there. Or sometimes there's certain types of drugs people take, like at least hallucinatory drugs, which totally distort your sense of time. Completely distorted. You think everything seems like it's going really slow, really very very slow, or it seems like it's going very fast. Or they've done experiments on people, they who were in deep caverns and with no light, they don't see the sun, and they just so after some time, what happens is the person's day stretches out to a 48-hour day. He thinks that's normal. The cycle becomes a 48-hour cycle instead of a 24-hour cycle. This all becomes distorted. So our sense of time, our sense of space, everything, because we're tiny, very tiny, like little bugs, who just like an insect walking on you doesn't even know that you exist. What do What are we? We don't see what's actually existing around us. We don't see what the devas can see. We don't see what Lord Brahma is seeing. What to speak of what Krishna sees. So, any other questions? I like that. Hare Krishna. Praise the Prabhupada.